You're listening to the cycling podcast at the 2025 Vuelta a España, sponsored by Lloyds. Lloyds has made a significant commitment to cycling as proud partners of British Cycling and their flagship road racing events, including the Lloyds Tour of Britain for both men and women. Next Saturday, the Lloyds Tour of Britain will reach the Tumble, one of the most feared climbs in South Wales, which returns to the race route for the first time since 2014. The riders will tackle it not once, but twice, with the stage winner crowned at the top. The Cycling Podcast will be there to cover the action, thanks to sponsorship from Lloyds, and we're really looking forward to seeing who can conquer the Tumble. Lloyds, there at every stage. Before that, there's another huge race going on in Spain, of course, and we've got that covered too. So let's get over to Daniel to find out the latest.
You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the 2025 Vuelta a España, celebrating 10 years of the Cycling Podcast on the ground every day at the Grand Tours.
Michele Bellacci for the final time in this Vuelta a España. That is a sad thing to say at the start of the episode, but it is true. Michele, we're going to get on later to your week, your unforgettable week. We're certainly not going to forget it in a hurry on the Vuelta a España. But, well, buenas tardes, Michele.
Buenas tardes, Daniele. Hola.
Where are we?
We are under a gazebo in downtown Zaragoza, close to the Ebro River, one of the longest rivers in the Peninsula Iberica.
You tried to start a polemica the other day in between the Tanaro and the Po, wasn't it, in Italy? You had people up in arms about that. I hope you're not going to start any kind of controversy about Spanish rivers this evening.
I don't know much about rivers and in Spain, but we had a sort of a stage as slow as a river, right? Just flowing to Zaragoza today.
Flowing sort of languidly, in languid fashion, downstream towards Zaragoza. Michele, it has been that kind of day. The heat has returned to the Vuelta a España, hasn't it? It's been a hot day, about 28, 29 degrees. It was certainly very hot at the finish line. We have gone south into a Spain that felt more familiar. We talked yesterday about the return to the kind of Spanish Dust Bowl, and that certainly described the landscape. Very beautiful landscape, actually. Big skies, big landscapes that we saw today on the drive from the start this morning to in the province of Huesca to Zaragoza, where we are now. But Michele, where were we exactly this morning? Just remind me.
Just under the Templars Castle in Monzón. A strange castle. Didn't see much of that.
Yeah.
To be honest, we were in a parking just outside Monzón.
I'm hoping you've got something to show for your what seemed like hours of research on the start town in the back of the car today. You assured me you were working. What were you finding out about the start town today?
A lot of stuff. For example, I'll give you the short hits right away. Monzón has been home to the sports people like Conchita Martinez, the first Spanish woman to win Wimbledon, right? An important tournament of tennis, of course.
Yeah, we know Wimbledon, Michele.
Templars Castle in Monzón was built in the 10th century when the Muslims used to rule this part of Spain. Then the Templars conquered it and made it sort of their main headquarters until the early 14th century. This is why the start of the town of today's stage was called Monzón Templario. And walking through buses today felt like crusades this morning, right?
kind of. And Michele, on the drive to the start this morning, we went through Barbastro, the hometown of Sergio Samitier, who was going to be one of the protagonists of the stage. We also passed some very futuristic-looking wineries, didn't we? We were in the Somontano wine producing region, and we saw some fantastic structures. Obviously a lot of money has been pumped into that region and the wineries of that region. We saw evidence of it this morning. Michele, it was a very busy, were you liking them to the Crusades? I'm going to do a quick run through of various interviews I did this morning, which we can't feature all of them, but there's a lot to update you on. Incidentally, overnight, just this relates to yesterday's stage, of course, we had that summit finish at Cerler, which wasn't as dramatic as we thought. Our friend Juanfran de la Cruz, who I've mentioned before in our Vuelta podcast, so Vuelta historian, he contacted me this morning to say that, Michele, something very special could be cooking in a few years, because just to the left off, if we'd gone off to the left before the Serler climb yesterday, there is at the start the beginnings of a new road. The government of Aragon is investing 5 million euros in the resurfacing. The road is being tarmac for the first time, of a sort of forest road that they've sort of called. It's going to be sort of Spanish obisque. It's a pass into a new valley. New valley for that road. And I think it goes over 2,000 meters in altitude. And it's probably going to feature in the Vuelta a España some point in the future. Sounded very exciting. And it is exciting because, Michele, that's not something that happens very often these days. New roads in the mountains, certainly new mountain passes connecting one valley to another. That is it's rare these days.
Interesting. I want to go back to Spain with the bike. I wanted to go, of course, before and now, just more and more, maybe a gravel bike now. I still have to go with a gravel bike.
Indeed. Michele, I'm just going to run down some of the interviews that I did this morning. Ben O'Connor, we know that he's lost a fair bit of time already in this Vuelta a España. He said that yesterday was good. He felt much better yesterday. Why have we not seen more GC action so far in the Vuelta? He said, the courses have been a bit straightforward, but he thinks Bilbao next Wednesday will be chaotic. Priyank Kokal, Cofidis sprinter, he would be one of the protagonists of today's stage. I thought I'd catch up with him to find out how he was feeling after the Tour de France. Of course, he was involved in that crash that put Jasper Philipsen out of the Tour de France. He talks afterwards about how it had really mentally shaken him up, and he'd taken quite a while to get over that. He said he'd recovered now, but he was still having finger problems. We remember he broke his hand or a finger at the Tour de France and had to pull out. He's had surgery since then. He was still struggling, certainly this morning, with it. Still not 100%. He was looking forward to sprinting. Giulio Pellizzari, I think we both spoke to him this morning. He's in the white jersey. He said that he felt a lot more tired after 1 week of the Giro than he felt this morning after a week of the Vuelta a España. He's here still mainly to win stages, but he's helping Jai Hindley as well on GC. Mateo Jorgensen, riding his first Vuelta a España, he told me he was enjoying seeing different parts of Spain. But he said that as far as Visma at Elisabike are concerned, they're very happy with the situation. He said their intention was to be agents of chaos at the Tour de France. Here, they're quite happy that it's been a calmer race so far. Last thing, Michele, we wondered aloud yesterday about how Bahrain victorious would be feeling last night with Torsten Trein having kept the red jersey, looked good yesterday, but Antonio Tiberi having fallen out of general classification, and also Santiago Buitrago having lost time yesterday as well. I turned to our good friend, Bahrain victorious, super domestic these days, Jack Haig, for answers, Michele, on how exactly they did feel last night. We're going to hear from Jack. We're also going to hear from Tiberi himself about exactly what went wrong yesterday.
Just indulge my crackpot theory that I expanded on my little radio show last night. Were Antonio and Santi, were they sitting quite close to the front and maybe taking more wind than they would ordinarily have been taking if they were further back?
Possibly. But then we also have some of the Grand Tour debutants here. So we have four of them in the team. And this morning at breakfast, the discussion was about how much easier it is to be the first team at the front and not have to do all of the small accelerations you have to do for the fighting for position and everything like this. So you might end up with the same average power, for example, but the way you create it is much differently when you're at the front. It's a much more consistent over the stage, whereas it's much more surgy when you're behind, because then you're really racing for the top of the climb to make sure you're in position, and then you drift back, and then like you have all the accelerations through the villages. And so maybe, but then Torsten also did a really good ride and he was in exactly the same position as them.
Just confirming that I know nothing about cycling, as we all suspected. Jack, just finally, kind of cagey starts at a well. So is it purely the course, or again, another crackpot theory? Seems as though there are more riders who are sorted for next year earlier on in the year nowadays. There's less of a sense of a feeling of sort of desperation about the world. I need to show myself here.
Again, maybe, but I think also this year the rider market has been quite a bit slower than previous years. I think that would be true in other years, but this year you have like the merger of Lotto and Intermarché. There's a question mark around Arkea. There was a big question mark about Remco for a long period of time. It was kind of holding up the rider market, and there's still probably a few unanswered questions out there with riders that were maybe under contract that are maybe trying to change teams. And I think that the rider market is quite slow this year compared to other years. Maybe it's also that the welter, it has been a relatively maybe easier start than we have had in the past. And also with Visma and Jonas here, I think maybe they are quite confident that Jonas can take the red jersey later on, so they are in no rush to try and make the race too aggressive.
Yeah, don't feeling good to follow the wheels and doing really a lot of fatigue. Yeah, to stay in the peloton, and yeah, I tried to fight the first kilometers, but yeah, then the body was completely like empty of energies, and yeah, this is also strange because I eat well all the day. Yeah, also after Poland, where I did good, I was like 2-3 days not feeling super super well, like also stomach and.
Interesting stuff, Michele. Jack there proving once again that I know very little about professional cycling and how it works. Anyway.
I love, Daniela, your little, you know, musette picking of things out of your musette.
Well, it was a very full musette this morning. Unfortunately, we don't always get to hear all of the interviews we do in the morning because they come at us thick and fast. But we try to sort of pepper the episode with little bits of information that we do get. Just on sort of tidbits of information, I should also add one last thing before we hear what happened today. There have been a lot of reports in the last few hours, one in particular from Dani Miranda of AS newspaper in Spain, about the future of Juan Ayuso, of course, yesterday's stage winner. Dani Miranda seems to think that Ayuso to Little Trek at the end of the season is pretty much a done deal. That seems to be a developing consensus in the Vuelta a España.
And the main riders of this Vuelta are putting some pepper on this race as well. We had Joao Almeida yesterday saying, Jonas Vingegaard, you know, the guy who's not loving to pull. He's not doing 100% efforts in this race so far. Meanwhile, Jonas Vingegaard admitted pretty openly the fact that he and his team are trying to... ¿Cómo se dice?
God.
To hold energies and not spend too much.
Yeah, to economize, to ration their efforts, shall we say.
So a bit of shenanigans there between the two of them.
Lovely, Michele.
And I read an article today in Italian media, bici.pro, had an interview with Jace Hindley's future wife, saying that, I didn't know this, he underwent surgery to fix his nose. He had a deviated septum. As he suffered from multiple allergies.
Bernal also had one of those, didn't he? Which he admitted afterwards was partly cosmetic as well, if I'm not mistaken. Anyway, Michele, enough of that. Enough of that. Let's find out what happened in today's stage. It is time for your final jamonometro.
El jamonometro de Michele Pelacci.
Pelacci. Zaragoza, I think you get pretty good jamón in Zaragoza. We'll find out this evening. But how many jamones are you going to give to the stage today?
Oh, not many, Daniele. We were expecting some wind. No wind today. Pretty boring stage. I mean, the final K was everything we had it. So, dos jamones, the El Pozo brand, even discarded ones like Juan Ayuso the other day. Did you see how he received some more jamón today?
Oh God, not more.
You know if he took it at the end or not?
No, I suspect he didn't.
So this is what happened in today's stage, Daniele. Right after the start in Monzón Templario, a three-man breakaway went up the road pretty easily. They are Joan Bou of Caja Rural, Sergio Samitier of Fokokofidis,
local boy,
José Luis Faira of Burgos. Their gap went up as the wind did not cause any drama. A very slow first hour of racing and not much happening at all in the Spanish deserted countryside allow us to say right here in the jamonometro that MasterChef Celebrity Daniele is coming up in Spain, is starting next week on Monday. The Spanish TV said that a lot of times during today's live.
Sat up straight in my chair. Where is this going, Pelacci?
No, just to say, to continue the wrap-up of the stage. Eric Antonio Fagundes, George Bennett and Oliver Knight did not finish the stage today. A sprint finish was expected in Zaragoza, and a sprint finish it was. The first rider to pass under the flamme rouge of the last kilometer was Alec Segart of Lotto. We'll hear from him more later on. The sprinter's team were out in full force to take one of the few opportunities in the entire race. Today's favorite, Philipsen, came out in the last 25 meters and was able to beat Viviani, Vernon and Marit. There were a couple of relegations and the stage as well, after the stage as well, but in the end, second stage win in this Vuelta a España for Jasper Philipsen.
Well, the relegations were very significant, Pelacci, because that was fake news, what you just said, because Viviani didn't finish second in the end. He was relegated to 105th place.
Yes, but, yeah.
And Coquart was relegated from 6th to 106th place. So let's tell you exactly what the finishing order was. It was a bit of a blank where four riders spread across the line. Important to say, and you said to Jasper Philipsen in his press conference as well, it was pretty clear that, well, it looked to us as though none of them knew who had won. Those four riders spread across the road were Philipsen, and originally Viviani was one of them as well, Vernon, and Arne Marit. I'm going to run down 4th to 10th, Michele, I think, just tell you who came in a little bit further down. Anders Foldager of Jacob Alula, Madis Michels of EF Education first, Thibaut Cruel of Groupama, Fabio Christen, Ben Turner. Mads Pedersen was way down in 9th place. A lowly 9th place for, well, certainly by the measure of people's expectations for Mads Pedersen. And David Gonzalez of Q36.5 finished 10th. Michele, we're going to get into those relegations, what exactly we think they were for, in just a moment. On general classification, no change. Torsten Tran of Bahrain victorious still leads by 2 minutes and 33 seconds from Jonas Vingegaard with Joao Almeida in third place. 2:41 down points competition. There was a bit of movement on that due to the results of today's stage. Mads Pedersen still leads 120 points. Ethan Vernon is second, 111 points. Jasper Philipsen third, 105 points. I should just add as a little footnote, Ethan Vernon said at the finish line that the green jersey wasn't really a huge priority for him, wasn't a big priority. But he may yet find himself in the shakeup for that jersey. Jay Vine still leads the King of the Mountains competition. And Pelizzari is still in the Young Riders jersey.
You know what, Daniele? I think a couple of slight and on a second lesser note, GC movements happened because Tiberi, Godu, Ayuso, and Jay Vine lost sometimes. I'd say in purpose to, you know, being able to be more free, to attack, to go in the breakaway in the next days. There was no reason for Ayuso to get 5 minutes today, right? To arrive 5 minutes down.
No, that I hadn't noticed that, Pelacci, and that's a very good point because we have got some stages starting maybe with tomorrow's stage. We've been fairly sort of sniffy, dismissive of tomorrow's stage as an opportunity for the general classification riders. So perhaps the likes of Ayuso Vine will be down the road again hunting for stage victories. Pelacci, we'll dig into it all, particularly that sprint finish, in just a moment. But first of all, let's hear from some of the riders who were in the thick of it in Zaragoza just an hour or so ago. You spoke to
Alec Segaert
of Lotto, who was leading out for Elia Viviani, his immensity, his majesty, Elia Viviani, who was subsequently relegated. But we're going to hear from a very disappointed, bitter, I suppose, Elia Viviani after Segaert, and then after Viviani, we're going to hear from Arne Marit, who was third in the end, crossed the line fourth. He was also very disappointed.
The plan for us was to get really in the front in the last 5K because then the GC teams would go away. We were there perfectly with five guys still. We managed to keep the lead until the last 400 meters and then I didn't saw the sprint, but I think it was a close one. We tried everything.
How was your train composed? Who were the last men? Two as well? You as well?
Yeah, it was exactly like we planned with Jonas and Eduardo to keep us out of the wind the whole day. And then in the final was Lars and Liam, who did great pulls in the last 3K. And just under 1K to go, I came on the lead and tried to really speed up. And then Jasper did the lead out. It's almost like in the books. So I think we cannot have regret.
We're very close to winning. Elia now is probably crying over there. How is the feeling in the team now?
This day was really a goal for the team. We said in the meeting, today is all in, like there's no tomorrow. And then when everything goes perfect and he almost takes the win, that also shows what a champion he is. He wants to win. We're not here for second place, but that is the result today.
It's painful, no? You look the line in front and then, yeah, you feel it's closer, but then, yeah, when a guy of Philipsen is around, it's never end until the line, so, yeah, big chance lose. I mean, it's even more painful with the job of the team. I mean, it was amazing, as you see. Put me in the perfect position. It was a bit of confusion where to start. If they open the door on the left or on the right, I prefer to go on the right. And yeah, if you look a sprint like this, you can afterward, you can see, you can approach in 100 different modes and probably you win. But when you are there, this is the feeling. And I just, when I go, I just go and go to the line. I hear screaming Philipsen on the barrier, so I don't have any idea to close him. I mean, it's not like this. I win races, so yeah, close call. So yeah, hopefully, yeah, the last week still we can do some sprint. Just need to be positive and look what the team have done, because I can't ask more.
From when you crossed the line and you heard Philipsen won, tell us about those minutes for yourself. How it was being so close. We spoke about it, how hard it is to be a sprinter these days, but being so close to a new Grand Tour stage win.
Yeah, you know, it's like I say, you see me in the last 8 days, really happy to be here. At the same time also struggling, because it's the truth. But when you go really close to a big goal like this, it also mean, yeah, you are a serious athlete, still at 36, try to beat the best sprinter in the world. And yeah, I'm happy to be there, for sure. I'm really sad to don't finish off today, but cycling is like this.
Is there anything the team could have done differently? Man, it seemed to execute it almost perfectly, and maybe just Jasper has those legs.
No, you say right, so they do perfectly. I mean, I can't ask more to the team. So what I say also in my career, all what I wanted was just because of a strong team, and today was another chance. I show I can be there. Still, I can't beat Philipsen, but yeah, it's a good moral boost for the next week. So now I just need to focus to hang on for a week, and then waiting for the last week to chance. So there is two big chances on Friday before Madrid, and then Madrid. So yeah, we keep fighting on the climb, and we want to play again the same way, and maybe next time will be the successful one.
Well, Anna, what a sprint. We thought you might have had it then.
Yeah, I think first of all, I have to say big thumbs up for the team, because from the moment we arrived here on the local circuit, we were always in control, and Huub was really almost the whole lap on the front, so really impressive of him. And then I still had Dries in front of me. We said it was key point to go on the roundabout, but yeah, I was already a bit on the limit because we were so early in the front. So I took already a lot of wind, and then I lost the wheel of Dries. But I then didn't panic, because I saw the lap before that it opened on the inside of the corner. So I say, okay, I do a sprint to the corner. Then I came like fourth place, but then it didn't open soon enough to really launch a sprint, because I had to go from left totally to the right. And yeah, I think when I can find the gap immediately, I sprint for the victory. I'm already 3 years a World Tour rider for Antimaché, and yeah, I get a lot of top five places, but never the win. So yeah, it feels a bit like a missed chance today, because I think on the line I came really close. I think if I can launch 2 seconds earlier, or maybe 1 second, that's I come already really close. But now yeah, I just missed out, and feels like a pity, but we still have three chances to sprint, so It's good for the morale, and we keep fighting.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Well, Pelacci, I made a beeline for Arne Marit after the finish line, remembering I referred to it actually in my question to him. I don't know if we heard it there, but I referred to the stage of Cordelier a couple of years ago where he came very close in the Giro d'Italia, chain came off, and he was very, very upset, visibly upset afterwards. We had Elia Viviani, I think, sort of weeping behind his sunshades. I arrived a little bit late,
yep.
But I think he'd taken quite a while to gather himself. And obviously, what we heard, we had Elia Viviani's for our Encuentro del Día a few days ago, sort of reflecting on where he is in his career, the fact that he wants to carry on. He still thinks he can be competitive, but sprints have changed, and it's obviously harder for him than it once was. But his team today did a superlative lead out, didn't they?
Amazing job by the Lotto teammates. They were full committed to bringing Elia Viviani in perfect position, and I would say they did. Viviani popped up in the right moment, right time. He was in front almost the entire way to the line, only missed a bit of power in the last 25 meters. I was there like a centravanti in Italy.
Center forward.
Man marking the Lotto Soigneurs at the end, because I knew Viviani would have come back to them after the sprint. And he came back just crying a lot. He said nothing, no words for, I would say, 3 minutes.
Which is unusual for radio, for a man whose other nickname, as well as his immensity, his majesty, is Radio Viviani, because he's a very loquacious chap, usually.
And as he was talking to the press, to the media, video interviews as well, I was looking at his feet. His feet were trembling. He was shaken by this, because he knew...
You only get this kind of detail with Michele Pelacci. this is what we pay you the big bucks for, Pelacci. Several occasions, probably about 50 occasions throughout the day, I'll ask you, what are you doing, Michele? What does this contribute to the GDP of our podcast?
This is it.
And this is what you're doing.
This is it.
You're so, cooking, brother.
So the guy, as old as he is, right? He's one of the oldest guy in this Vuelta a España. He was shaking after getting so close to the win.
But, Michele, it would be remiss of us. Well, we can't ignore the fact that he was relegated. Now, you've been studying the footage. What is your conclusion?
I would say this relegation is BS, brother.
Okay, what happened?
So, in the last 25 meters, you could see Viviani getting closer and closer to the barrier, to the left onside of the road. And that's where Jasper Philipsen was coming up. But Viviani lost to Philipsen. So this sort of move by Viviani did not cause any problem to Jasper Philipsen. In fact, I would say Jasper Philipsen was not sort of skeptical or angry or had no problems with this move by Viviani.
We should say we're making an assumption here. We haven't got the post-stage communique. Even that, it won't necessarily, well, it won't refer to the specific incident. On the post-stage communique, there is simply the UCI regulation, which has been contravened. So we won't know exactly where the incident, alleged incident, has occurred. But that certainly looked as though it could have caused a relegation. With Cocar, I think if you look at where he started his sprint, and you look at all the plate. If you did a heat map of Kurkau's sprint, first he went right, then he went left, and he ended a long way from where he started the sprint, I think, in his case. And he obstructed. Similarly, Vernon, who ended up, he ended up finishing second in the rejigged order. I don't necessarily think it was the difference between Vernon. He certainly wasn't throwing up his arms, and I don't think he mentioned Kurkau's deviation in his post-race interviews. I may be wrong about that. But yes, similarly, I would suspect that that was the reason for Kurkau's relegation. And Pellacci, I'm sure tomorrow there'll be recriminations in the morning when we speak to some of these riders, the sprinters. Well, as you listeners all know, this has become, well, not just recently a bone of contention, but I think over the past 2 or 3 years, obviously now we do have video assessment of the sprints, and there have been some rules being reinterpreted, I think rewritten in some, well, yes, certainly rewritten in certain cases. And I think frustration about inconsistency has been growing.
You're right. And there was a lot of discussion about the sprints that Danny Van Poppel did during this Vuelta a España in the Deutschland Tour, because Tadej Pogacar himself wrote on his Instagram stories that he thinks that the relegation for Van Poppel were not right. I think today, Daniele, if you look at how Viviani left the right amount of space for Philipsen, for him to get beaten by Philipsen himself. So what Viviani should have done more?
Viviani even referred in his interview to the fact that he heard Philipsen behind him. He heard Philipsen, I think he said he heard Philipsen scream, yep, and he knew exactly who it was and where he was, and there was the option in that moment to sort of close him against the barriers or close him out. And Viviani said, well, I take pride in never having done that kind of thing in my career, so I'm sure he'll be very, very aggrieved this evening. But we are, yeah, I'll say it again, we are sort of assuming that that is the infraction that he's been punished for. Pellacci, Arne Marit, I mentioned the fact that he came very close in the Giro d'Italia a couple of years ago. He's a fella who has not won very much so far in his career. He's 26 years of age. And
one win
he's
as a
two,
pro.
Two wins, I see. One win, as a fully-fledged pro. He's had a lot of second, third places.
Yep.
And it feels as though he's getting closer, but he was very frustrated again, as you could hear in that interview. His family was there, his parents were there, and he's an interesting character. He's got an interesting story. Do you know the story about Arne Marit? Do you know the story about Arne Marit and Remco Evenepoel?
I do not.
He won the first bike race that Remco Evenepoel ever took part in. And they subsequently became very close friends. And there was a story about a shower. There was a story about, here it is. This was sent to me a while ago from our good friend Jan-Peter de Vliegen, who writes for Het Nieuwsblad. The first race was a time trial, local time trial championship. Marit beat Evenepoel. A few weeks later, Evenepoel got a shower in Marit's house after they trained together. And Marit's father said, imagine if a future world champion just used our shower.
Wow.
So it proved. Extraordinary stuff.
Close, but no cigar again for Arne Marit. We could hear some cigar smell right here, right? After our cervecita,
yes,
am I wrong?
Yeah, in downtown Zaragoza. Pellacci, we haven't talked about the stage winner, Jasper Philipsen. He seemed to suggest in his press conference, you asked him a couple of questions, he seemed to suggest that he was really struggling today, didn't have great legs. He's been saying that really throughout the Vuelta a España. And he said he got lucky. He found the right wheels at the right time and was just about able to sort of dig out the victory. Jasper Philipsen at his best, I would suggest, would have won today a lot more easily.
Interesting. He said he's tried to communicate with his teammates in the last kilometer because he lost of their wheel, so to speak. And you can tell from the from rewatching the sprint, you can tell that he was sort of lost. But he was the smartest one in recognizing that the good train was Viviani's Lotto. So he jumped on Viviani's wheel. And then in the last 25 meters, he somehow found the energies to, you know, just get out, right place, right time. He said his legs were destroyed even before the sprint. And he was, again, able to use someone else is trained to do what he does, which is winning a lot of bike races.
Not too many more opportunities for the sprinters. There were a couple of the sprinters that were referring to two more opportunities after the stage today. One of them is Madrid. I forget where the other one is. But there is another one that's a sort of clear-cut sprinter's opportunity. Pelacci, we did wonder about today's stage whether we would see some echelons. There were times during the stage, certainly on Spanish TV, Perico Delgado and the other experts commentators were talking about the wind maybe picking up and changing direction and possibly splitting the bunch. Now, we know that Fernando Escartín is from this region. Fernando Escartín, former rider, we've talked about him already in this Vuelta a España. One of the better Spanish riders in the 90s and early 2000s. And he's now the sort of technical director, course designer of this Vuelta a España. He was also interviewed on Spanish TV earlier today. And he said that, well, frankly, he was disappointed because this isn't the first time when he's tried to, or he's plotted a stage, had a stage in mind with the idea that the wind was going to blow and it was going to split things up and make things interesting, and it didn't happen. So what we got was a fairly routine bunch sprint, and we've had quite a few of these on weekends in Grand Tours this year, which is unusual. Usually the Grand Tour organisers, they like to have a big showcase mountain stage or mountain showcases on the weekend. At the Tour de France in the second weekend, we had two flat stages, didn't we? So a little bit disappointing, I would suggest.
We'll have a kind of showdown, an unipuerto, typical La Vuelta style, tomorrow. We'll talk about Valdescaray later today. But to add one thing on the sprint, Daniele, I will relegate both of Cofidis guys, because I saw Aniel Koski and Brian Cocar, teammates of course, sprinting of opposite side of the road.
Never
with
a good
no
look
clue
to them.
Of each other. It was not great to see from Cofidis.
No, Pelacci, although this obviously doesn't apply because Cocar got relegated, but we saw that from Astana earlier in the year when they were trying to pick up as many points as possible in the fight for survival in the World Tour, and Cofidis are involved in the fight for survival. So there may be some logic to that. I think you mentioned earlier, didn't you, Pelacci, that Cofidis lost a rider today, Oliver Knight, the British rider. He pulled out of the Vuelta a España. Also pulling out of the Vuelta a España today was Israel Premier Tech's George Bennett. Now, again, we saw a lot of Palestinian flags today, didn't we, including at the finish line. That issue, what occurred in the team time trial a few days ago, has obviously overshadowing Israel Premier Tech's Vuelta a España. On the road, George Bennett appeared in our midst suddenly when there were about 15 kilometers to go of the race. We wondered what was happening. We were subsequently informed he'd pulled out of the race. Why? Well, George Bennett told us that his knee pain had become too uncomfortable for him to carry on. Let's just hear from George, shall we?
To be honest, it's been a terrible 3 weeks, you know. Crash stage one Poland, crash stage two here, crashed again stage four here, and I just start thinking like, the damage was, it's the annoying thing is, like, I feel like I got over the bits of the damage that I was worried about, you know, like my left knee, like was really inflamed, my ribs, everything, and they started to settle, and then suddenly I've just, out of nowhere, the other knee is completely gone. So yeah, I was just started today optimistic maybe an easier day we could nurse it through and try and get to the rest day, but unfortunately it just got to the point where I couldn't pedal, and you start doing long-term damage. And you know, like when I look at some of the problems we've had this year around knees, it's not really one of those things you just want to try and be tough and push through, because you end up on the couch for 6 months.
So the end of the Vuelta a España for George Bennett, of course, one of the more senior riders in this Vuelta a España. The oldest rider, Pelacci, do you know who it is?
I'm taking a guess with Viviani, maybe?
Wout Poels, who's nearly 38 years of age. Of course, he was the subject of our Encuentro del Día early on in the race. Elia Viviani was another. He was another one of our victims in the Encuentro del Día. Youngest rider in the race, Pelacci?
Oh, wow. I should know this. Is it? Can be Alex Segert?
It is Markel Belocchi of EF Education First. Mm-hmm. Easy Post, 20 years, 27 days old. Of course, the son of Joseba Belocchi, who was second in the Tour de France in 2002. He was third in the Tour de France on two occasions. He retired in 2006 when Markel was two. Now, Markel, a very promising rider, Spanish national junior champion in time trials in 2023, youngest rider in this Vuelta a España. Pelacci, he turned professional, was 18 months ago now, went straight from the junior ranks to the professional ranks. It was quite controversial in Spain. This is becoming more and more common, riders doing this, but there were a lot of people who thought it was too early. And certainly Markel's results in his first year suggested it might be too early. He was struggling to finish certainly the bigger races that he took part in. It's continued in the same vein at the start of this year, but things have turned around for him recently. He won the Tour Alsace a few weeks ago, the general classification, and also rode pretty well at the Tour of Austria just before this Vuelta a España. Now, he is going to be the subject of today's Encuentro del Día. This is Markel Bellocchi speaking to me this morning in Monzón.
El Encuentro del Día. The meeting of the day.
Well, Markel, your first Vuelta a España. Just tell me how it's going so far.
Yeah. It's a nice experience, no? Coming to La Vuelta, something maybe unexpected before coming here, no? And I'm trying to enjoy as much as I can. So yeah, it's there have been some hard stages, but I'm trying to enjoy a lot.
Just judging by your results, it looks as though you've got pretty good form.
Yeah, I think that I'm in a really good form, but just I'm trying to go day by day, you know, like not trying to focus on GC or something like that, you know. I know that I had a good result there in Pal in Arinsal, but yeah, yesterday I didn't feel really well, so yeah, I took the decision of just going easy until the final, just to go day by day. And when I see that I have a small chance to fight for, I don't know, for a breakaway or something, I will try it for sure.
You mentioned Pal. Do you know what happened to your dad in Pal in 2001?
I think he exploded, no?
No, he lost the Mayo de Oro back then, and he was in tears on Spanish TV on the climb. He had a very bad day.
Yeah, you know, this is how cycling works, no? Some days you have really good feelings, and then maybe the other day you are like dead, you know. So yeah, it is what it is, but yeah, that's it.
I'm sure you've been asked this many times before, but what's your relationship with your dad's career? How much do you know about it? How much does he talk to you about it?
Yeah, I know a lot from what he did, no, in the past 20 years ago. But yeah, I always say that we are different persons, you know. Like, he did what he did a few years ago. He had really good results in the Tour, at the Vuelta also. But yeah, I think my journey is going to be different, I think. So I hope to be, yeah, maybe as he was, no? He did really well, so I will try to be a good cyclist also.
Everyone knows with you, you turned professional very, very young. And I guess this was a decision that a lot of people have had opinions about. Was it too early? Was it too young? Have there been moments over the last 18 months where you've thought, oh, this was a bit early?
I don't want to think what would happen before if I didn't make this step of coming straight to the World Tour, you know? I'm focused on the present. I know that maybe last year I didn't have the best season for me. I made a lot of mistakes, but yeah, I learned a lot also. So I think that this year it's been a bit better than last year. So I will try to every year to improve a lot, and then to see what happens in the future.
Give me an example of the mistakes. One mistake that you made last year.
Coming straight from juniors. Maybe when you are a junior and then you are a good rider, everything is a little bit easier, you know. And then you are coming here, and then everyone is in a super good shape in every race. You need to be prepared psychologically, physically also, with all the nutrition stuff, all that. So, you know, you can make a lot of mistakes, but yeah, you also learn, like I said before. So yeah, it's I think it's a process of learning a lot every day.
It looks as though you had a bit of a breakthrough this summer with Austria and then Alsace as well. Tell us, why do you think that's happened?
No, I did.
I had with a mononucleosis for 3 months from Basque. So I've been 3 months without racing, and then we went to Austria just to test a bit the legs, how the body was feeling, because I knew that during the trainings the feeling was okay, but we really wanted to see how it was in during racing, you know. So I went to Austria, the result was to be the first race after 3 months. It was really well. So yeah, we took the decision of going to Andorra for a 2 weeks training camp there in altitude, and then I was feeling really well. The legs were super good, and then we went to Alsace with the Divo team just to because we really wanted to feel again like that winning feeling, you know, that just to see if I could win in that race. So we went there, and then it was possible. I won the race. So after Alsace, I received the call of coming to the Vuelta.
And well, how did that make you feel to get the call? And what were you afraid of, if anything?
Not really. I think it's a big race, you know. But I want to learn, and I don't want to be scared about anything, you know. So I just want to enjoy and to learn every day.
Last one, Markel. What's your dream in professional cycling? No, dream and your sort of realistic idea of where you're going to be in 3 or 4 years.
You know, everyone has his dreams. No, my dream also, my biggest dream is winning the tour. You know, but you never know. You know, like this cycling every day is improving a lot, and then we go faster every day. So it's going to be super difficult. But I really want to be a good rider for I don't know if. Races of 1 week or some, or maybe 3 weeks, we don't know. I just want to be focused on the present now and on how it goes every day, to learn every day and to see how I develop.
Después del día del Anglio, yo creo que sí, efectivamente, parece que tiene margen ahí, 200 metros tan solo para el final, se lanza el sprint por detrás con Salvatore Comesso, que viene empujando fuerte por detrás, pero yo creo que tiene tiempo Igor González de Galdeano, vamos a ver.
Was a big attack from Galdeano, but always tailwind, was a tailwind, strong tailwind, and was too fast, and in those years, our maximal gear, probably 54, the big gear, was not 60 or 60... like those guys use today. So it's amazing when you think that we rode at 55 k's an hour in a 53 and 54 gear, you know. So I can say that today is the same wind with those gears that those guys are using today?
70.
Probably.
Vamos a ver, levanta los brazos y efectivamente. Victoria para Igor, que entra con 2 segundos de ventaja. Por delante de Sven Teutenberg y de Biagio Conte. Bueno, vaya alegría que se ha llevado ahí Igor González de Galdeano. Sensacional el triunfo del corredor del... Destruye la
preciosa... Pelacci, who on earth was the second voice we heard, or the second sort of little montage we heard there? That was referring to something we talked about yesterday, the 2001 stage to Zaragoza, this incredibly fast supersonic stage, 55.17 kilometers an hour. We had a bit of commentary on Igor González de Galeano winning, and then the other voice you heard was Victor Hugo Peña, who's working here for Colombian TV and rode in that stage in 2001 Vuelta a España. 2001 Vuelta a España, of course, which, as you heard in the interview with Markel Belocchi, his father, Joseba, was leading until he started to get ill and cracked on the stage to Andorra. Pelacci, tomorrow, unfortunately, and we're going to have to mention it, you are heading home.
El día de despedida.
Yes. You're going to, what is it? You're going to compete in the Olympics, you told me?
No.
Is that what you said?
I'm going to write for the official website of the Olympics.
Okay.
About the Vuelta a España. So we will be still in contact.
Marvelous stuff. Pelacci, I'm going to get a few, well, tonight, I've already told you, we're going to do your report card over dinner. We're going to...
we're going to assess how you've performed generally. Excellent, excellent. Straight A's, I would say. Just to spoiler it already. But Pelacci, you hadn't done the Vuelta a España, of course, before this week. What are your hot takes? What are your big takeaways? Obviously, the race itself hasn't really crackled into life yet, has it?
Exactly. And for my perspective, I must say that this one we had today was just the second stage entirely held in Spain. Just the second one after eight stages, because we had Italy, of course, in the Grande Partenza, and then France, and then Andorra. So I couldn't get much of a hold on Spain, but the northeastern part I was able to see, gorgeous. Today you mentioned the Dust Bowl. It was a very Martian landscape with few vegetation, but I loved it. I have to come back here. It's beautiful. I just disliked Andorra. Andorra, it's a big thumbs down for me, but Spain, so many climbs, not many people on the roads. Love that.
Pelacci, a lot of talk, including in this podcast, over the last 48 hours, it's sort of gathering momentum. This, I suppose, it's a debate about the Vuelta a España thus far, the fact that it hasn't been as exciting as we're used to seeing Grand Tours in the last few years. Certainly, generally speaking, nowadays, they're designed to provide a lot of action in the first week or so. And to be honest, when we saw the profiles of this Vuelta a España, at first glance, it did look as though it was going to be an exciting first week because there were plenty of climbs. However, upon closer inspection, and as it's turned out, as it's transpired on the road, these climbs have not necessarily lent themselves to aggressive racing. Now, we heard earlier on in the episode, Jack Haig tell me that it didn't necessarily have anything to do with the situation in the transfer market or where the transfer market currently is, but there might be other factors, particularly just the climbs themselves and the situation in the race. We've talked about the fact that a lot of the riders are pretty happy with where they are at the moment. Visma are happy with where Jonas Vingegaard sits. But Pelacci, your verdict on how the race is poised, what have we seen so far, and what do you expect us to see in the coming week or 2 weeks?
I want more aggressive racing as well. We said before that Jonas Vingegaard has been riding conservatively so far. He has to gain more seconds, more minutes on his opponents to win this Vuelta a España. I'm sure he'll try to do that in the second week. The big mountains are still coming.
You can't really criticize Visma Lisebike for the way they've ridden so far, though, can you?
No, perfect for them. They're in great position. To still win this Vuelta a España. But, you know, a lot of talk has been done about how Grand Tour racing gets boring when Tadej Pogacar is in. So he is not in this Vuelta a España, of course, and not, I would say, not much better Grand Tour racing.
As you say in Italy, Pelacci, this could be addressed to all of those who suggest that racing is boring when Pogacar is around. You wanted the bike, now pedal. I.e., you got exactly what you wanted. No Pogacar, and this is the result.
Hopefully, on the Angliru, on the Borda del Mundo, we'll have some Real Ciclismo.
I think that might be the first time you've even said that. I thought we were going to have that every day. Constant references to Ciclismo. Pelacci, it is time to talk about it was your penultimate supper, and also tomorrow's stage when you won't be joining me, but you'll be, I'm sure, an attentive spectator.
La etapa de mañana, la cena de ayer. Tomorrow's stage, yesterday's food.
Last night's dinner. Well, Pelacci, have you finished those patatas bravas yet? I mean, governments have been elected and changed and dismissed in Italy in the time it took Michele Pelacci to get through this plate of patatas bravas last night.
I was called El Gringo a lot because right away, just when I sit at the table, I ordered a sangria. And I was told by Daniele, who's been visiting Vuelta a España for 10 years, he's interviewing the youngest rider, but he's the oldest journalist at this race.
Okay, that is not true. I'm still comfortable in the youngest half.
He has never tried sangria somehow. I did it right away. It was a pretty average sangria, I would say. But then
Spanish,
patatas bravas.
Spanish called it tinto de verano.
Huh.
It's a it's summer red wine.
Oh, really? So
I don't know if there's a distinction. One of the listeners, I'm sure many of the listeners will know whether there is, in fact, a distinction. But that they're basically the same thing.
I had fried chicken, patatas bravas with my tinto de verano. I had the time of my life, just while Daniele kept saying, "Muoviti, muoviti, veloce, veloce," to go sleep.
Yeah, you were enjoying yourself, Palazzi, weren't you? And that is one of the great things about spending time with you. You always seem to be enjoying yourself, even when I'm giving you a hard time, which I have done regularly over the last week. But Palazzi, before we formally say our goodbyes, tell us what is in store in the Vuelta a España tomorrow, please.
A pretty long stage, I would say, almost 200 kilometers. As we said before, Unipuerto from Alfaro to La Estación de Esquí de Valdescaray, the top summit. It's a first category climb, top set, 1,500 meters of elevation. The final climb is 13 kilometers long, 5.2 average gradient. You'll be happy, Daniele, to hear that a couple of towns that the race will pass by have Veneto names.
Oh, yes.
They are Arnedo, Sarzano. So very North Italian names. But yeah, it's up and down, kind of typical of this part of Spain before the final climb. The final kilometers are pretty easy. 1.4, 3.7% gradients in the final kilometers. It will be a stage for Roglification, but he's not here.
Alas, he is not here. And Palazzi, while you've been telling listeners about tomorrow's stage, I've been studying the difference between Sangria and Tinto de Verano. There are some differences. Generally speaking, Tinto de Verano, literally red wine of summer, is lighter. It's made with lemon soda or soda water. It's more sort of citrusy and lighter. So, anyway, Palazzi, tomorrow, you talked about those riders who had lost time today. Keep your eye on them tomorrow. Ayuso, Jay Vine. It should be a fast start. You would think it would be a fast start, but we've been wrong a few times about the sort of first hour we were going to get in stages in this Vuelta a España so far. Palazzi, we're gonna end things there after I have thanked you once again, as I thanked you at the Giro, for your wonderful company. Your effervescent, a bit like Tinto de Verano, effervescent presence on the Vuelta a España this week. From the morning runs to the interminable dinners, it's been a blast. And you brought great insight and also industry, Palazzi. When I'm constantly telling you, like master chef who never turns the oven on, you always claim you're cooking, but nothing ever arrives on the plate. In fact, no, you've done splendid work this week, so thank you.
Gracias a ti, Daniele, y to all the listeners. Can't wait to come back sometimes in the Cycling Podcast.
That's an if, not a when at this point.
Hasta mañana a todos.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb, and Lionel Byrne.